Hello, world. Welcome to WFHR's Rapids Report for this Friday, November 7th, 2025. I have your host, James J. Maloff here. I want to send a big thank you to our friends at Crockett Septic, sponsoring the time, giving us a chance to talk to some of our favorite locals, like our good friend Scott Krug, joining us right now, Wisconsin State Assembly District 72 representatives. Scott, how you doing?
I am good. It's been such a busy fall. I think it's the first time we've connected since the end of summer. So, I mean, it's nice to be back on again and having some conversation.
It really is. It was really great to know that you were on the schedule, that we were going to get to catch up and everything. More on, you know, that in a moment and stuff. But we always understand the day job comes first, Scott. The day job comes first.
Yeah, so. Which one, right?
I mean, yeah, that's a good point. But I want to get into the, bipartisan election package that you've been working so hard on. There's also the solar facility project that you and Senator Teston have been working on. I want to talk about those. It's been a little while, so we haven't gotten to catch up on how the listening sessions went. So I want to do a little catching up with you. But before we get to some of that, Scott, you know, like a lot of you out there, I used to babysit my little brother and sister, and they were notorious for pointing the finger at each other. Neither one of them was ever guilty of anything. Neither one of them ever did anything wrong. It was always the other one. And at a certain point, Scott, I just started sending them to their room. I wouldn't even ask which one did what wrong. I just sent them to their room. You know where I'm going with this.
We've been talking long enough.
You know exactly where I'm going with this. Scott, when you are talking to your constituents, because you are one of those guys that we appreciate, that you go door to door, you are talking people face to face. You don't shy away from these things. When you're talking to people, how are you answering that frustration that so many of your constituents, so many Americans are feeling right now, where it doesn't matter if you have an R or a D in front of your name, we're all sick and tired of the whining and the pointing the finger at each other and in this shutdown?
Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how many phone calls and emails we get about federal government dysfunction here at the state level, right? And as much as I'd like to honestly say it's not my job, not my problem, it is, right? Because my constituents are the ones that have to suffer because Washington cannot get their you-know-what together, right? Yeah. So I've got to be able to go back to these people and say, okay, here's what has happened this week. Here's what's planning to be happening in the next week. And you see all the court cases flying back and forth between Donald Trump and the courts and the Senate taking votes and both parties saying, well, I did this and they won't do that. And it's just, it's mind-numbing and it's just stupid, right? And it has played out here in Madison even this week, too. We had two hearings on election bills this week and had a Republican bring an election bill in front of the committee that I sit on still. And I told her, I said, this is a bad idea. And you would not believe how big the world blows up when one Republican tells another Republican something's a bad idea. Like, we all just have to start being a lot more honest with each other and a lot more honest with our constituents. And I think the problem in D.C. now with the shutdown is, yes, the Republicans keep saying we voted for the clean resolution, the House has passed it, the Senate has voted on it 13 times, and yes, Ron Johnson has voted for that, and Tammy Baldwin didn't vote for this, but there is another way to go about it. It's not just to put a clean resolution in front of a group of people that are just never going to support it. There's a way to try to find out how to get people to yes. And that is the biggest problem in politics right now, is that everybody is stuck on no. That is the default setting for most politicians, whether it's state or federal right now. They're just set on no. Nobody wants to work hard enough to get the other person to a yes. And that is the most frustrating thing that I deal with here in Madison every week. Like right now, you know, as we're talking, it is a Friday and I'm sitting at the state capitol. When usually legislators are here Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, most of us are gone Monday and Friday, but I'm here. I am ready to work. I'm ready to help people get to a yes on the things they don't like right now, or to be here and have them come figure out how to get me to a yes. Like, we don't have enough conversation. We all just want clicks. We all want likes. We all want to be in the media, you know, and it drives common sense people nuts to the point where you even saw this week where a more moderate member of the Democrat caucus in the U.S. House just said, you know what, I'm sure I could keep winning this seat, but I'm done. Like, I can't deal with this anymore. So all this is doing is chasing good people out of positions throughout government and making it worse. So it's really hard for the good common sense people to want to stick around when they see all of this, you know, hellacious behavior towards each other. So it is sickening. It's gross. I don't pull punches with my constituents. I tell them to call both sides equally as much. Like, I wish I could cast a vote for the U.S. Senate and say, all right, we made a deal. The government's back open. And thankfully, I think today you might see that, actually. It has been absolutely disgusting.
Do you think that there are many people who are a part of this shutdown that were anxiously looking at their, you know, their website, wherever they go to collect the data, wherever they go to see their budget or something, and see if they had their focus, their benefits this morning? Part of the issue that's happening here is something that is we're seeing more and more in society already. This divide between the haves and the have-nots. And when you have people representing people and they can't relate to them, that's dangerous. That's incredibly difficult to deal with. And I don't know a single person that is a part of this shutdown that is experiencing anything to do with this shutdown. You know what I'm saying here. They're not suffering like we are. And if they're not suffering, what is the incentive for them to do their job?
It's easy to leave the blinders on. Yeah.
And with that, Scott, for somebody like me and many people that I'm talking to, and I don't know what you're hearing when you're talking to constituents, but the ones that I'm talking to almost on a daily basis now, it's getting more and more to the point of, well, you know what? Get rid of them all. Let's bring in a whole new batch. Let's get rid of them all, from the president on down. Like as far as when the next election cycle comes up, you're going to see some aftermath from this. You're going to see some fallout from this one. You're going to see some people losing their jobs that shouldn't have had them in the first place. Because if you're a politician, you got one job. Got one job. You answer to your constituents. That's it. The idea of a politician's opinion mattering is only getting bigger and bigger, where it's about them and not us.
Yeah, no, you're right. there's no apologizing that I could do enough for what Washington portrays onto everybody. It's not much different in Madison, but there are a lot of differences between the two levels, where we have a lot more conversation between the parties here. We do it on the biggest of big issues. You know, one of my closest confidants, and I think we both use each other just as much. I guess we kind of call it a parasitic relationship. But I have that with my ranking member in the elections committee. Like, we talk about everything. First of all, we talk about who we are, each as people, the things that we're going through, the shared experiences we have. If enough people start doing that, and that's what we're trying to model here in Madison, at least, is maybe it's not the policy that we should be trying to figure out. Maybe it's the modeling decent behavior towards each other that we've got to figure out first. So yeah, the sentiments are there, the feelings are there, the anger is there. It's not anything that anybody in central or western or northern Wisconsin is able to ignore, because we live it just as much. I've got 5 adult kids who go through the same struggles that I went through when I was in their 20s, and it hurts to watch them have to go through it. So I try to help them avoid it as much as I can. I wish if I had that magic wand, things would sure be a heck of a lot different.
Well, and one thing that I think can also be dangerous at these times is we have a tendency to lump everything together. And I am doing that in my own frustration sometimes as well. I don't want to say that everybody involved in politics is negative and we need to get rid of all of them. We're very fortunate in this area. We've got very good representation. Scott and I may not see eye to eye in everything politically, but I back him and I appreciate you with the work that you do, that boots on the ground and that staying local, that staying, you know, listening to your constituents. I think in many ways, we, as long as you've been doing this, Scott, we still don't know exactly where you land politically, because I feel like you, more times than not, if not every time, are going with what your constituents feel.
Man, I tell you, I go through those same headaches here, and I've said it maybe too publicly sometimes that it gets some people on the right pretty ticked off, but I've said it the entire time I'm here. Like, I don't care if I get my head kicked in by both sides. It doesn't matter to me. Like, And I've used this analogy with you too before. It's like, I've been married twice and I have 6 kids. Like, I'm used to getting my head kicked in. Like, there's nothing here that a politician is going to say it's going to hurt me, but I'm going to do what's right, when it's right, how it's right. And if they don't like it, then they don't have to vote for it here. But if I can come back home and say, hey, this is all the things that I've done. If you want to keep sending me back, great. If you don't want to send me back, that's great too. You know, if there's somebody else that you think would do better, bring them forward and let's have that debate and open the conversation. And, you know, at some point I have to figure out how to step aside, and I need people to be encouraged to want to be able to do the things that we do here in Madison, but that is getting tougher and tougher too.
Mm-hmm.
To help people understand that it's not all just getting your brains bashed in when you go to Walmart or
right.
or being in your community and having people yell at you. I mean, those are things that, you know, we're people too.
Right.
So when I get back in the community, it makes it easier for me to be able to go do my shopping, go hang out socially with people. If I've actually done my job here, it's a lot easier.
Even when you're frustrated, even when things are tough, you can still have some class and treat each other with respect. And even when you don't agree with a politician, treating each other with respect goes so far, especially when kids are watching, kids are paying attention. If we want them to grow up to be good people, good citizens, even politicians themselves, we have to be able to walk both sides of this. We have to be able to do both. And speaking of doing both and both sides, a bipartisan comprehensive election package you've been working on with some of your colleagues, changes for the election observers, expanded rural access to early voting. This is, if it wasn't for the shutdown and some of these things, this would probably be the big topic with, you know, election season right around the corner next year and everything. Scott, I know this is something you've been working really hard on. How has that been going and where are things now?
I brutally honest, like I usually am here, is it's tough. Right. When you've got tighter majorities than you've had in previous sessions, you've got to thread the needle a little bit more. So it takes a little extra skill set to get some of these big things done. So I think the main focus I've got right now on election bills is not just getting them onto the floor and getting them onto the governor's desk, but really analyzing exactly what they mean and what they do. For example, the in-person absentee voting hours is probably my number one priority. Where you can see communities across the state who have over 100 some hours in the 2 weeks before election day opening up their community halls and village and city halls to people to come vote early. But in much, or if not all, of rural Wisconsin, especially where I am in Adams, Juneau, and parts of Wood County, there are none, right? So it's not just saying, okay, we want you, municipal clerk, in a very small town in Adams County to do as many hours as Milwaukee does. Because that's not realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So we do data-driven analysis to say, hey, if you have a population base or a voter base of less than 100 voters, we want you to do 5 or 10 hours in 2 weeks. If you have the next year, we want you to do 10 to 15 hours. If you're a regular average-sized town, city, or village, we do want you to do the 20 hours in 2 weeks, just so everybody in the state of Wisconsin has the same access to voting. Those are the things the governor has told us when he's vetoed other bills in the legislature on elections, that he does not like any bill that he perceives as limiting voting access. Point taken. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the one where we can say, okay, even in rural areas, Governor Evers, we're probably more likely than not, you'll have more Republican voters coming to vote early. I know that you're a man of your word to say, okay, you want to expand access for everybody in the state of Wisconsin. Let's find one place that we can agree on that everybody should have the same access to in-person absentee voting. Let's figure that out. So I think that's the one that we're actually going to get across the finish line, where everybody in the state will have the same access, maybe not the same amount of hours, but the same access to make our elections more uniform across the state of Wisconsin.
When it comes to other work that, you know, you think needs to be done on this, where will your focus go after that?
Yeah, I the number two priority I've talked about a long time is we hear all this conjecture about non-citizen voting, right? So I have said from 2023 onward that I just want the ability for the legislature to be able to obtain data from the government agencies just to help us prove that it's not a problem, or if God forbid it may be a problem, that I actually have some data and analysis and can actually prove it is or isn't. So another bill that we did was AB 595, which actually requires the Legislative Audit Bureau to have communications with the Department of Corrections, Department of Health Services, Department of Transportation on driver's license data, on death data, on felon eligibility to vote data, and just finally gather all the data, compare it to the statewide voter list, and just make sure that there is nobody on our voter list that shouldn't be. And I know my clerks do a hell of a job. Municipal clerks and county clerks have developed a great relationship with the entirety of them across the state of Wisconsin, but there's still 25% of our population that's just not sure. So I see my job as just trying to make sure as many people in the state of Wisconsin feel as confident as we can get So if it takes some more data matching, some more, some more technology in this process just to make sure we're all doing what we're supposed to do and we all know what the answers are, then we're happy to do that. So that's AB 595 and then AB 312, I think, are the two biggest priorities, just to finally put the rest, all the conjecture on all of these things that get thrown into the election space. Because like I said, I think elections are a proxy for what we do for democracy in the state of Wisconsin. Kind of all starts there. So we can model good behavior. We can model good public policy. We can actually get to the point where people have faith and confidence in both sides of the aisle, that they feel they can connect with their legislators, and that actually things actually end up getting done. So I think just this program I've put into my head these last 3 years driving towards that isn't just election bills. It's about decency, common sense, and giving the middle and right and left of both sides, who are the 60% of our population who don't hardcore identify with the political party, a place to go with their concerns.
We're speaking with Representative Scott Krug right now. And Scott, we had Senator Tessin in last week, or earlier this week with the On the Job series last week. It was fun.
I saw that. That was pretty cool.
We had a blast, man. I've talked to him, worked with him for so many years. I did not realize he's basically somebody we went to high school with. It's fun. It's such a great series that he's doing. And it really does do so many of the things that I think he wanted to with that series, and really showing not only being in people's level, learning different jobs of his constituents, but also being on the same level as his constituents. And that goes so far, as you know, I'm sure.
Yep, it does. And Pat and I talk about this all the time. Like, before I was 25 years old, I think I had 27 different jobs, right? Okay. I mean, it is great to see everybody out there getting the experience that they can. I remember my days calling ice hockey games at UWSP and working in radio. Like, I mean, those are memories that you keep with you when you have these different experiences. You remember the people you met, the places you were, the stories they had. You can put it all into your perspective when it comes to legislating then. So it's great to see him at a concrete company 1 week, at the radio station the next week, and at a social service agency the week after. So, I mean, the guy is doing a great job of, broadening his breadth of knowledge and his focus on the community, and thankfully for us, I think he's focused a lot of his attention on Wisconsin Rapids, and it's made it a great partnership to have a state senator working with their state rep to finally find some things that work for Wisconsin Rapids.
Well said. And speaking to that point, you and Senator Tessin participated in a press conference introducing legislation allowing for construction and operation of community solar facilities here in Wisconsin. There was some other conversations that came up after that, and we let Senator Tessin on, or not let him, but we're bringing that up with him because he wanted to, I don't like saying clear the air, but for lack of a better way to put it, he wanted to do that with it. I wanted to give you the same chance.
Yeah, I mean, as we see the expansion of the need to, produce more energy in the state of Wisconsin, solar is always going to be part of that portfolio. Whether people like solar or not, it's going to be part of our communities, especially in rural Wisconsin, where we have space, we have land, we have people that have not needed it as much as they did before, i.e. paper companies who don't produce timber anymore. So we are the hot spot. But that doesn't mean that there should not be some local control, some local decision-making when it comes to siting these individual projects. I think community solar is a good balance because we probably don't see the political will in Madison to tackle that on large-scale utility projects. But we also said, you know what, if the large-scale utilities are going to be able to do whatever they want, however they want, why shouldn't a community solar program exist as well with some local control for us to say, hey, if Walmart wants to put up 5 megawatts of panels on top of their roof, why don't we let them? Mm-hmm. Why is that a problem for the large-scale utility companies when we let a farmer who uses a corner field of his 40 that he can't irrigate for extra things similar to a 5-megawatt project of solar of his own that he can put energy onto the grid? So the goal with community solar is to put more energy on the grid, open up access for everybody else to do what the large utilities do, and still give local control to local units of government to say, okay, I think that's a good idea too. We can get our constituents on board. Everybody knows what the project is. There's no more hurt feelings. It's not even about solar. It's about fairness.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to the testifying you did this past week for the Committee on Transportation, you addressed the support of Assembly Bill 425. I wanted to talk about that a little bit because I think, you know, and this hits to your other wheelhouse, Scott. There are two things that we, because of all these other conversations, I don't think we've been able to put a lot of focus in that really need it. We need more homes. We need more houses. You know this from your other industry. We have a lack of inventory when it comes to that. And transportation in this state, those are two really important topics that I don't know that we're spending enough time on. Assembly Bill 425 looks like it does some of that.
Yeah, so 424 and 425 kind of play together on how mobile homes and manufactured homes being such a big segment of housing, and especially Adams, Juneau, and Wood County, we need to pay some attention on how these are regulated, how they're used, what the rights of renters are, how we can control costs a little bit, but also how we can move these things on our roads, right? So we worked really good with the Department of Transportation to adopt some policies that they think make some sense for licensing vehicles that can haul these across our highways. And then on the backside of it in 424, just regulating all of these parks that I have all throughout Adams and Juneau County in particular, just to make sure that everybody knows what their rights are in case something goes haywire. Like, there's always a circumstance where somebody can't maybe get their rent this week or are a little behind. We want everybody to know what their rights are as tenants. If they're not on a lease, we want them to know what their rights are as an occupant, or if they have rights as an occupant. And on the other side, we want to make sure that the landlords feel like they can continue investing in communities that allow other housing options. Because when we drive landlords away, either in single family housing or manufactured home parks, then we lose options. Rents and mortgages get to be bigger costs, and we lose supply, and we make the problem worse. So we're trying to figure out the best way to not necessarily throw government at every aspect of these decisions, but to make sure that the ground rules are there, that everybody knows we're not moving the goalposts every time something comes up. So yeah, housing bills are a huge section of the work that we're doing again this session too. So I think we've got 7 or 8 different housing bills we're working on top of the campaigns and election stuff, on top of all of the other common sense things we're doing, and on top of that, trying to stop stupid stuff from happening too. I mean, you know, sometimes I tell people all the time, like when I worked at the jail in Wood County, I always called myself the goalie. Like, this guy's getting out of jail, this gal's getting out of jail, my job is to make sure they don't come back. I kind of take that skill set on here in Madison too to say, okay, I'm the goalie. Like, I'm not going to let bad things happen either. There's a lot of reviewing other legislation just to make sure that, you know, we don't do the stupid stuff that we don't need to do too.
And just a couple more things I had for you, Scott. I know how busy you are. I really appreciate the time. Before, you know, we, as you mentioned earlier, we haven't gotten a chance to talk in a while. A while back, you were doing some listening sessions. I believe those wrapped up. How did that go? How did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I mean, I always like doing the listening sessions. We don't get to do as many as we did pre-COVID. I mean, it's still harder to get people to turn out post-COVID to some of these things yet, but they are starting to come back. So we do get to have more one-on-one conversations with smaller crowds. We get to dig into, you know, the other, you know, other layers of the onion that aren't just necessarily the big things, where people can feel comfortable to come talk about a more personalized story or a need that they have. So just being able to be there to hear those stories, to bring them back here to see if we can affect some change. I mean, those things matter. And I've been getting a lot more people actually coming to the office too lately. I mean, with the addition of Juneau County to my district and the proximity of getting on the interstate and coming from Mauston or Nisida or Camp Douglas to Madison, I'm actually seeing more in-person visits to the office too about different things. And that's getting to be more and more of a regular thing that people feel more comfortable about doing again, is coming to talk to their legislators, whether it's back home at a listening session or coming to the office in Madison, because the door is always open here. I tell people all the time, just because I sit in this office doesn't make it mine. Like, come hang out here if you want. This is your office. Like, I'm just sitting here most of the days of the week doing stuff. But, you know, I think people need to understand that this is their building and these are the things we want them to do, is tell us what we should be doing before we do it.
It's encouraging to hear, and great to hear. And speaking of people stopping by, that's where I wanted to wrap up. You had a constituent, Samantha Gray, stop by your office last week.
Yeah,
she was part of a juvenile justice advocates group. Can you tell us about that group a little bit and how that experience went?
Yeah, like I was excited, like to have somebody come and to not be nervous and just be able to approach me and me talk to her just as two people hanging out and talking about, you know, issues that she's seen in the community. I mean, it's just, it's awesome, right? So we always encourage that, and we, you know, try to get a picture together just to say, hey, you know, come on, somebody else come and do it. And I think that helps a little bit. But her group is really interested in trying to, you know, right size the juvenile justice system and try to figure out a way that we don't incarcerate juveniles as adults as much, that we can give them a chance to grow mentally and physically as a juvenile, but still in a correction setting where they can get, you know, programming and the thought and concern and counseling and get back on track instead of just throwing away people and locking them up forever. So, I mean, it has been an issue that's been, you know, very deep for me for a long time. Like I said, having served in the Juvenile County Sheriff's Department, working at the Wood County Jail as a discharge planner, running the drug court. I mean, I used to see those things more and more, and it's nice to still have some exposure to it, but to see the same people going through the same thing all the time, I mean, you know that there's more that we can do for them individually instead of just lump sum, just throwing them away and locking them up.
Right on. And always appreciate that perspective, Scott. And always appreciate the time, man. It's always good talking with you. We'll catch up next month a little bit more. We'll have some time to talk a little sports before we wrap up as well.
Well, just to leave you with one final thing is I hate the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Let's get that out there. You are not alone on that one. I think that might be a great campaign slogan. It might just actually be the perfect campaign slogan.
It was. So I did. Okay, real quick. I'll tell you a real quick story. Is I called Bingo for Rissa the other night at the Riders. I always go out and do a bingo night for them every so often. And we got to the big end game. It was a big blackout game, big prize at the end. And halfway through the game, I said, hey, by the way, are there any LA Dodger fans here? And nobody raised their hand. I said, good, because I wasn't going to let you win the last game if you were. So that's how serious it is. So
that's awesome. That's fantastic. Scott, if people have follow-up questions, they'd like to reach out to you, what's the best way to do that?
Yeah, I mean, text or phone call or even a Facebook message. The number is 715-323-3293. May not get a return phone call right away, but if you shoot me a message either on social media somewhere or a text, at least I see it right away. Like I said, it's a very busy time of year right now until probably just right after Thanksgiving. So doing our best to stay as caught up as we can.
Appreciate the time, Scott. Safe travels out there. We'll talk again real soon.
Yeah, you bet, man. Take care.
You too. And appreciate all of you joining us again for another edition of WFHR's Rapids Report.